Welcome to the EmpoweredPatientPodcast.com show. I'm Karen Jagoda. My guest today is Dr. Bill Kerr. He's the co-founder and CEO of Avalon Healthcare Solutions. That's AvalonHCS.com. And the topic today is mining the value of genetic data. So I want to welcome you to the show today, Bill. I appreciate you taking a few minutes to be with us.
Thank you, Karen. It's a pleasure to join you, and I appreciate your time as well.
Why, thank you. Tell us how genetic testing has grown over these last 5-10 years now.
So exponentially is the short answer. Just to give you an idea, I think most people know that, you know, over the past 2 or 3 decades, our ability to measure DNA has expanded. And last couple of decades and last 5 to 10 years, we have seen an expansion of the technology that can do it. So the speed with which we can do it. And then also the number of tests we can run. So we're at, just to give you some quick data, we're at about 175,000 genetic tests that can be performed today. And people estimate we get about 100 new tests a day that are developed. So that gives you an idea of sort of what we've done over the past 2 or 3 decades. And most of that has happened over the past decade.
Tell us what kinds of clients Avalon works with.
So our job is really to get the science of lab testing adopted in the industry. And the way we have done that is by working with health plans who have to adopt coverage in order for the testing to be paid for, and the labs who actually perform the testing, and then the physician experts who either define the testing when it's useful or who are ordering the testing. So we kind of live in an ecosystem where we're working with all those parties to try to ensure that good genetic testing is adopted, the results are understood, and that they are acted upon appropriately.
Tell us what has really driven the growth of all that genetic testing, the variety of testing, and also the use of it, the wanting of that data, the need and understanding of that data.
So it's a good question. So the ability to measure what's happening in DNA, I think we all know from the Human Genome Project back in the 90s leading up to 2000 was sort of the first time we figured out how to sequence DNA usefully. And since that time, we've been, as an industry and as a country as a whole, kind of hoping for the day when that ability to measure DNA would suddenly result in us understanding more things about ourselves. I would argue, Karen, that that has taken longer to get to commercial grade, if you will, than maybe we all hoped back in 2000. And so what is kind of evolved more recently has been that the speed with which we can sequence DNA has exponentially grown. So back when I was in a lab doing research, it might take us several days just to sequence a few hundred pairs of DNA. And now we can run thousands literally in seconds with some of the machines. So one is that technology that has allowed us to expand. And two is we got a little bit smarter about what to measure. There's a lot of DNA that can be measured. It can be our DNA, which I think we all know from times when people talk about an inherited disorder or inherited risk, but it can also be the DNA of other agents, specifically infectious agents, as an example, which we all learned, unfortunately, in COVID, that when we do PCR, we're actually measuring for the DNA of the organism that may be causing us a problem. So that speed, that understanding, and then focusing where we're measuring our own DNA or the DNA of agents that may be affecting us has really driven a lot of this growth in the testing recently.
And what about the drop in the cost? That's been pretty significant as well, hasn't it?
It has. When I first was getting into this business, it was still relatively expensive, pretty expensive to perform the analysis for the mutation. So to sequence the DNA and try to figure out whether or not that DNA compared to other things had a problem, which is typically maybe a mutation or maybe several. The cost was all in doing that analysis. As those machines, that technology has come online that I've outlined that does it so much faster, the cost of doing the analysis has actually gone down. But we, as with anything, as you get more data, the complexity of interpreting that data has gone up. So genetic testing remains costly and complex, but where the cost is, where the expertise is, has shifted a little bit from conduct the analysis to actually understanding the results and interpreting the results, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And tell us about the challenges that the payers and the providers are facing when it comes to understanding this environment that you just described.
Yeah, boy, they're facing a number of them. So it's been known for some time that new evidence, new science in healthcare typically takes 17 to 20 years to get adopted. That's one problem that applies to areas of innovation, not just genetic testing. Secondly, with genetics, as I mentioned, there's an exponential explosion in what we can measure. So keeping up with that science and adopting that science is difficult. That's difficult in other areas. It's particularly difficult in genetics. Add to that, that it is difficult to know what test is being performed at times, because the way we discuss or share information in healthcare frequently can involve CPT coding, and the testing explosion in genetics is so fast that the CPT coding lags way behind. So we end up struggling, if you will, between systems like physicians ordering tests, providers performing tests, and payers covering tests. We end up with complexity of how to communicate that as well. So adoption, explosion in innovation, and how to communicate when the coding is so far behind are really, I would say, the big areas in which there are challenges and where we've been really trying to make a difference.
Is part of the answer trying to figure out which diseases are going to be most revealed by genetic testing, which patients are at the highest risk, so that there can be some kind of funnel effect so that the right people are getting these tests?
Yes, and I might back it up just a little bit. It's a very good question. The real issue is trying to understand when a test can be useful to a patient and a doctor. Honestly, just because we can sequence DNA doesn't mean we understand what it means and we understand what to do about it. And so I would suggest to you that one of the reasons we have heard the phrase precision medicine for so long, but have not seen as much of that get adopted, is we haven't really understood the link between what we see in the DNA and what we know to do about it. So I'll give you a couple of examples. One, cancer. I mean, obviously cancer has been an area where we have really for some time understood that certain genetic predispositions or even mutations can drive cancer or can suggest that cancer could be worse. But we haven't really had therapies until, you know, more recently that we're actually targeting those mutations. But now we do. Now we've got several great therapies that are tied to that. So previously, just doing the analysis may have had no real benefit to the patient, or maybe later had some prognostic capability, but now actually has therapeutic relevance. And so that's been very important. I would suggest to you, we've seen that same problem in things that are inherited. So if you think about cancer, we may have a mutation that developed after we were born. In the case of inherited disorders, usually it's something we were born with. And as you know, there's been a lot of people offering to analyze your DNA and tell you whether you're at risk for conditions such as neurodegenerative disorders or cardiac. But what to do about it has been very unclear. And so whether that's a useful test to run is hotly debated. So a lot of it's had to do with, as you said, who can benefit from this test and what are we going to do about it that helps them benefit? Because it is an expensive investment to make in a patient's health, and the doctors and the patient need to understand whether that investment is going to be useful.
But in the case of cancer, because time is the enemy, if that test is done and there's action that can be taken from that data, they can be saving lives. They could be keeping people from going into late stage disease. So wouldn't you say over the long run, what we're talking about is really saving lives?
Yes, and I'll give you an example. So non-small cell lung cancer has some mutations that actually now have therapeutic decisions that are affected by that. So which drug you go on is absolutely dependent on whether you have certain mutations in that cancer. And if people do not run that test and they start the more traditional chemotherapy agents, which really don't focus on specific mutations, but just focus on fast growing cells, we've missed a huge opportunity to get them on the right drug. By the same token, if what happens is someone orders the analysis but misinterprets the results, and then they start a precision drug when there is no mutation there, you've also missed an opportunity. So getting the test performed when it's important, and then getting the results interpreted correctly is critically important to patients with certain types of cancer, and is certainly one of the challenges in healthcare today. I mean, the academic centers keep up with it a bit more sometimes than the community centers. And one of the things we've been focused on is how to ensure that science gets scaled out into the community and the testing is used appropriately.
What about the fact that a lot of these diseases are not caused by a single gene mutation, but it's the interaction of genes or the mutation of several genes? Is your system able to do a cross-analysis? You're saying there's so many different genetic tests, which makes me think you have to stitch some of those together to see a broader picture. So how does it work if it's really a complex kind of cancer?
So that is one of the real challenges. So some of the examples I first shared, like non-small cell lung cancer, where you may have a specific mutation, are the easiest in a way to interpret and to target, which is why I think we're seeing both great tests, but also great therapies. There are other scenarios where it's almost a prevalence of certain conditions. It's almost a statistical analysis of what's going on in the DNA of the patient or the cancer itself versus the patient that is required to have an understanding and that may suggest whether this is an aggressive tumor, for instance. And that becomes more complicated to interpret. So earlier when I was suggesting that some of the real complexity and cost has shifted from analysis to interpretation, it is because of what you're alluding to, which is, hey, look, this isn't a yes or no answer. I have a mutation or I don't. This is a, what's the constellation of results look like in my case? How do we interpret them? And how do we then understand whether they are telling us to be more aggressive or less aggressive? So that is absolutely part of the complexity. We are able to help with that, but I will tell you that collecting those results and analyzing them at scale remains a challenge for the industry. And what I mean by at scale is ensuring that populations are getting the care they need is actually harder than doing it on an individual basis. And so we're making significant investments today to do that at scale and ensure that populations of patients are actually all getting the right testing and the right interpretation. But it is complicated, I won't lie.
And what role does AI, machine learning, play in making sense of all this data? Is that part of the solution?
So part of where we are right now is really focused on managing the results at scale, which is almost more like you hear the phrase big data or something like that. So it's more like getting digitized results and marrying it up to other data that is critical. So marrying up the results of genetic testing to, say, information around the care the patient receives, such as which other additional tests like biopsies, imaging, and chemotherapy has been selected, would be an example. That sort of big data, and much of that can, I would suggest to you, is kind of pre the AI machine learning piece. Where we're going next really is when you take results from patients who have, let's say, non-cancerous conditions. So there's more and more things coming up where we can measure the DNA in your body and understand sort of whether you have a predisposition to risk. Understanding when those people have a predisposition to risk, whether or not traditional therapies seem to be delivering outcomes, those are places where I think you're going to see us making investments in AI, where we don't actually know the care to be delivered, but we're starting to get data around the patient profile. Looking at that at scale and understanding which populations of patients perform better under what conditions, that's where I believe AI is going to have a much bigger impact than where we are today, let's say in cancer care, where it's we know the decision tree and we're trying to get that decision tree adopted across the industry. Does that make sense?
Yes, it sure does. I'm wondering what the consequences are for doctors and payers if they don't embrace this kind of data when they're considering treatment decisions.
So it's a difficult one. So we are seeing under testing in certain scenarios. And that's not something you typically see. As I said earlier, kind of all innovation has some level of uneven adoption for a decade or two. So it's not that surprising that there's uneven adoption. And because of the expense and the complexity of genetic testing, I'm not sure it's that surprising, but under testing, when it can actually drive a key decision, is obviously a problem. And an example I would suggest to you is there is a good test out there on the market that for certain women who have a certain type of breast cancer and have lumpectomy, where that test would suggest whether they will benefit from additional chemotherapy. And if you really think about that, that test suggests who does not need additional chemotherapy, which is really the most important part, because if you're going to have the same outcome, but you can avoid the complexity, the cost, and honestly, the risk from infection and things like that that is associated with traditional chemotherapy, that's an important decision to know. And so that's an example where under testing has an obvious consequence on the cost quality of the care delivered. And so because that test is complicated, because the interpretation of it is complicated, because it's expensive, and because people may not know about it, it is not yet used in the manner I think we all believe it should be. And that's an example of where there are opportunities to drive faster education and adoption across the industry, I believe.
Well, my last question is, what expectations should patients have about getting genetic testing?
I think patients should make sure that they and their doctor understand when it's going to be useful to their treatment. I think just because we can measure it doesn't mean that it's going to be useful. And it doesn't always mean that we want to know the answer. And I'll give you an example that's been out there for a while, but applies to a lot of the things we can analyze now in inherited disorders. But the question of whether or not you want to know whether you are at increased risk for a neurodegenerative disorder like Alzheimer's or Parkinson's, that everybody has a different predisposition to that. If I'm already going to do the things that would help lower the likely incidence, whether I'm at risk or not, I may not want the stress of knowing I happen to have inherited a constellation of things that put me at higher risk, versus other people may want to know that. So I think it's very important to, one, understand what the test is going to tell you and understand how the result's going to be used. And in some cases, like inherited disorders, make sure it's a result you want to know, because we have limited ability to impact some of those today. So I hope that's helpful in terms of how to think about when genetic testing makes sense and is a worthwhile investment.
Thanks to my guest today, Dr. Bill Kerr, co-founder and CEO of Avalon Healthcare Solutions, AvalonHCS.com. I'm Karen Jagoda, and you've been listening to the EmpoweredPatientPodcast.com show. Like us on Facebook at Empowered Patient Radio. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.